And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Hope and Chris finish the last episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. Luckily, dependable Dave Filoni and crew create Rebels with new characters, new places, and new adventures, thus keeping hope alive for this podcast. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi.
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars Rebels. In this episode, with Kanan in Imperial custody, Ezra makes a risky deal and sets a plan in motion to save his master. There will be me realizing that I haven't done this part in the notes where I go, there will be, and then I say a funny thing or something because apparently it got deleted out of my notes or something. So here we go. There will be droid murdering, secrets revealed to a crime lord, and the space fam makes some pretty difficult choices. We're talking Rebels Resolve this week. I realized at some point I had deleted that out of my notes, and I don't think I've done the there will be section all season.
I think you're right. I didn't even notice.
I didn't notice either. And so, like, I kind of want to go back and see where I left that out. I don't think I've done it all season. I think it got left out of my Clone Wars notes. Because then I thought back, I could have been like, there will be Hope's boyfriend makes the scene, Grande's here, and Alexander Callis. I was like, I could have made all the jokes all season, and I didn't.
I've been doing them on the show notes.
I know. How you doing, Chris?
Doing good. It's a little unusual. It's a daytime. So maybe I'm a little more perky than usual.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of still on the end of, like, waking up. I usually hit my stride about 1 p.m., and that's when my brain's like, okay, we're fully ready to go. So I'm right at that time, so.
Excellent.
We were just talking a little bit about Resistance had its finale today. Chris hasn't seen it, but I have, and I enjoyed it.
I'm hoping I'll catch up with it this weekend. I don't know. It might be during next week.
You know, it didn't have as many feels as I thought it was going to be, but it had more feels in the places I wasn't expecting to have feels. Does that make sense?
I guess. It'll definitely make more sense when I see it.
Yeah, because it had feels. It just didn't have feels in the places I expected it to have feels. And so it was still... I really enjoyed Resistance. The first half was pretty darn slow, but the second half was really solid. And I can't speak for Chris, but I feel that if you've been sleeping on the show, you've been missing out. So
yeah, you might want to catch up now. Well, now you can binge up to the exciting stuff and know that it's coming.
The thing that's going to get me that I'm excited about is Resistance is going to be coming back before episode 9. So it's going to have brand new sequel trilogy stuff before episode 9. And that's what I'm excited about. And Celebration is less than a month away, and I know there's going to be a Resistance panel, so I'm almost positive we're going to get an early look at season 2. Actually, Resistance panel.
I'm sure they will.
I actually think they talked about that in the press release. Lucasfilm to host 3 panels at Celebration.
That's what Star Trek, Star Wars Celebration exists for.
Let's see. Rebels Remember Clone Wars. And join us for Resistance. Oh, yeah. So join the Resistance for a look back at a shocking season 1 finale and preview of the second season of Star Wars Resistance. So, yeah. That just makes me so excited that it's going to be, like, showing us sequel trilogy stuff, like, well before, a few months before episode 9. And it's going to be fun. I'm very excited. Like, the second half of the show was pretty darn solid.
I'd also like to note that, like, the animation of it has been getting, like, just nicer and nicer to look at as it goes along, as they get used to doing it in that style. The last half of the season's been really kind of visually gorgeous in a lot of ways.
There was one scene, big in the finale today that I just stopped and I was like, that's a Chris scene right there. I looked at it, I was like, Chris is gonna love that shot.
They use light very well in this, and having parts look flat and having other parts look dimensional, and it just looks very nice as it goes along. I really like the aesthetic of it.
I kind of feel like that way about Rebels. Like, in the beginning, I really didn't like the animation, but I needed time to grow on it.
I think they get better at it as the team works with their software and with, you know, the look that they... Because the look for Rebels was different than the look for Clone Wars. And, you know, and once they get into the swing of it, it starts, you know, that once they probably learn to make everything move better and get used to everything and have, like... a lot of their more models built and just sort of in the can that they can use, they just get prettier and prettier. Clone Wars did too, you know.
Yeah.
Clone Wars looked a little awkward at first, and then, you know, the people, you had the same people working on it, and they got better at it and better at it. So it's fun to watch, and it seems like that's the process that they do to make the shows, and I like that process.
Yeah, so make sure you watch Resistance, because it's get through that first half, but it's a lot of setup for the first half. It's all set up for the second half. So while it might seem silly and kitty and stuff like that, it's all to set up for the second half, and it's all worth it once you get there. And
you'll be prepared when J-Guys and Jedis becomes a Resistance.
Yeah, when we get to Resistance. In about 2 years.
Couple years, yeah.
So maybe a little bit less, because I know season 1 and 4 of Rebels is only like season 1 is 13 episodes. Season 2 and 3 are, I think, 21, 22 episodes. But I think season 4 is 13 as well, I think. So, I mean... It has 2 seasons of short seasons, so... Cool.
So we'll whip through that.
Yeah. So, and by then, they'll probably be in the works of another Filoni show.
Right, actually, yeah. That's the pattern that's going. I think we've got a sort of pattern working here, so...
Actually, now that I think about it, it wouldn't just be a Filoni... Resistance would only be in season... 2, 3, maybe going into season 4 by the time we get to Resistance. Yeah.
Well, if Filoni craps out and decides to go into retirement, and they decide not to do any more animated shows, it sounds like we'll have at least a couple live action shows.
Yeah, I was actually just about to say that. Wouldn't it be fun if, like, for a stream or a commentary. Because we always try to cover the Filoniverse in the show, doing the episode that he directs of The Mandalorian, to see how Filoni it is.
I'm all for that. I think we should do it for the show anyway.
Mm-hmm.
We'll do it for Filoni.
Do it for Filoni. Cowboy hats off for Filoni. But, well, you ready to get into this one?
I am ready.
All right, so... Rebels Resolve is the 14th episode of Star Wars Rebels, and it was released on February 23rd, 2015. It was written by Charles Murray and Henry Gilroy, and it was directed by Justin Ridge. Some extra information for you. The holographic file on Kanan lists his vital statistics and his crimes against the Empire, including the theft of Imperial supplies, resisting arrest, assaulting officers, and piloting without a license. And then I put in a note that this is a kid's show, but if it wasn't a kid's show, killing Imperials would totally be on that list, too.
Yeah, murder was coming to my mind, too. Yeah, that's
This marks the debut of the Imperial Light Cruisers, a reworking of the Jedi Light Cruiser seen in the Clone Wars series. It was inspired by the transition of Jedi Cruisers into Imperial vessels seen at the end of Episode 3. The Light Cruisers is more than a simple repaint. It had some subtle updates to its design. When shown the prisoners listed on the Light Cruisers display screen, the name Wookiee Jam Crew can be seen, an inside joke from the production team. During the Clone Wars, they could reuse a single crewman's character model multiple times to populate the ship, since they were all identical clones. In Rebels, the Imperial crewmen have to have their hats pulled low to conceal the fact that they're the same animation model being used over and over again. So that's why all the Imperials that aren't, like, named characters have their hats pulled down, because it just makes it cheaper and easier for animation.
Less faces, yeah.
Yeah. In Rebels Recon for this episode, Taylor Gray, who voices Ezra, voiced something that we talked about before in the show. Ezra has faith in people, which we've said at length before in our episodes. And Ezra does believe that Visago will not sell them out as Jedi. And then Gray quickly adds, but Visago would totally sell them out if for the right price. Vanessa Marshall, who voices Hera, says that about Hera's initial choice to not go after Kanan was, to her, the right choice. It's better to save many lives opposed to one. They have to keep on track, but Marshall said it was definitely a hard choice for Hera. Pablo Hidalgo talks to him about Chopper. He said that the audience could see that Chopper can be annoying in the way of the Ghost crew, but he said this episode was so important because it showcases exactly why Chopper is there. You can see that Chopper is missing Kanan too, which is why he fights so hard in this episode. And Dave Filoni says that the crew had discussed the life of the Imperial droid that was booted out of the Ghost at the end of the episode. And he said that its battery would probably run out. And when Andy Gutierrez was like, oh no, he dies, Dave came back and said, not die, just turned off. Probably becomes a monument out there in the grass with Lothcats sitting on it. And finally, for the Rebels Recon for Fires Across the Galaxy next week, Pablo answered some questions about this episode. One of the questions was whether or not Stormtrooper armor is airtight. He says that it can be sealed, but for the troopers in this episode, they don't have much air supply. I also want to mention that Pablo did say that the troopers were blown out of the airlock, so I'm sure that made Chris really happy.
That's correct. That is accurate.
You know who also likes to blow on some airlocks?
Vacuum of space?
I don't even... Have you ever done things with a vacuum, Yoda?
Yoda knows not what vacuum is. Unless you're talking about size noodle.
I wish I could find...
Oh, yes!
High five!
Celebrity skin.
How you doing this week, Yoda?
Moist.
Okay, let's move on. So, the question is from me this week, because I started thinking about, like, stuff, and then I was wondering about you, Yoda. My question for you this week is, what were you like as a Padawan all those hundreds of years ago?
Powerful tadpole was Yoda. Swam around in a little glass of water. used force to bring breadcrumbs into water. They knew.
So when did you start getting legs then?
You
know, if you're a tadpole, eventually, like, your legs came in.
6-8 months. Once legs came in, more midichlorians, more powerful Yoda got.
So, when you were older, and you were going through, say, like, lightsaber training, how was that? Because you're awesome with a lightsaber.
Had to hold tiny toothpick lightsaber in tadpole mouth. Made noise like this.
Oh, that's such a cute little image, Yoda. Someone draw it. You're not
drawing
dirty, Yoda, this week. You're adorable, Yoda, this week.
Release the Yoda tadpole.
All right. Well, Yoda, you're not dirty at all. You're just a cute little tadpole instead.
Yeah, don't let him fool you.
I know.
He's trying to trick you with baby pictures.
I love that image.
Yoda
of
was a baby once. Yeah, I don't trust it.
I love that image of, like, little Yoda, like, a little, like, tadpole face and tiny ears, and a little lightning, like, tiny, like, crackling toothpick in his mouth, just like, yee, yee, yee. Oh, I'm glad I asked this question.
Jeez. For once.
Well, don't forget, you guys, if you have questions for Yoda, you can either email me at hope@twotruefreaks.com, or you can leave us a comment in this episode on the Two True Freaks Facebook page. So, we need some questions. Give us questions.
We know you have questions.
We know you have questions.
There's no doubt.
Either about Yoda's histories, maybe Yoda's first girlfriend.
You don't even have to ask questions about Yoda. You could have... I'm waiting for people to try and get advice from Yoda.
Yeah, that's
Yoda
what
Yoda really needs to, like, get involved in you guys' love lives and stuff like that. Family lives, you know, the important stuff.
Yeah.
So it's Yoda trivia and stuff. You can pick up all that stuff around the edges. It's a good, solid, you know, Dear Abby type advice. Dear Yodi.
Or maybe you can ask for a friend. It doesn't even have to be about you.
Yeah, ask for a friend.
Make up a situational friend or a hypothetical friend and ask a dumb question for Yoda.
It's for a friend. Yeah, we understand.
Yoda understands friends.
Well, you ready to get into this episode?
I am ready.
What'd you think of the episode?
It was... I like this one. I like the second part better. But I like this part.
Yeah, I feel like this was a good... This was a pretty okay episode, but I just feel like it's all set up for next week. So, like, I'll get into it. I have a note about it in Act 3. You ready?
Yep.
All right. Act 1. Just to give you a little catch-up from last week, fucking Tarkin, a.k.a. Farkin, came to town. He was giving all of these district manager vibes as he put my baby girl with a U, Minister Tua, Alexander Callis, and the Grand Inquisitor, a.k.a. Mr. Grande, all in their places. Farkin literally trimmed the fat as he had both Oresco and Grint killed. And then he put a plan into motion to capture our heroes. He was only able to capture Kanan, but Hera and the Space Kids got away to fight another day. On to this week! By the way, Hera and the Space Kids sounds like a band name, and I love it. Anyway. We open with security on Lothal up a ton, as a group of stormtroopers are searching for the rebels, and they got a walker with them. From the rooftops, Ezra and Zeb leap onto the walker and take out the two dudes inside. A battle breaks out, and it's all a distraction so Chopper can sneak into the walker too. When he's inside, they look for all the detention logs for the prisoners to try and find Kanan. But he can't find anything since the entire system's down, because Farkin blew it up the comm tower last week. A slow walker chase ensues, and Sabine wonders how Ezra knows that Kanan is alive. And Ezra snaps back, "I'm a Jedi, Sabine! I know these things!" Meanwhile, Kanan wakes up to the worst thing imaginable, Tarkin's face. And Callus is there too, but Callus is beautiful, so it's fine. And then the title card comes up, and I thought the scene was going to be more longer, but it's not. So back to Ezra, who is making people scream and run for their lives because there's a rogue walker plowing through the streets of Lothal. And they're running out of options, but luckily, Space Mom Hera zips in on the Phantom to save them. They all jump on board, except for Chopper, who is still searching for Kanan. Zeb hops back onto the walker and yanks Chopper out of it. They barely make it back to the Phantom before the walker explodes, and Hera flies them on out of there. But the entire crew is upset that they couldn't find Kanan. Later, Hera is talking with Fulcrum, and Fulcrum is wanting Hera to leave Kanan behind and focus on her mission. But Hera says that she can make Kanan part of that mission. But Fulcrum adds that Ezra's message from last week is gaining attention and traction in this little chunk of the galaxy. And it's also getting attention from the higher ups in the Empire. Fulcrum fears, Ezra's message is getting attention in this little chunk of the galaxy. But it's also getting attention from the higher ups in the Empire. And Fulcrum fears that the hope they gave people would die if Ezra was caught. They tell Hera to protect her unit and to go into hiding, which Hera doesn't take well at all. The Space Kids are trying to figure out on a map where Kanan might be. Ezra taps into the Force and knows that Kanan is not in the Imperial Complex. Sabine says that they can't make plans based off of feelings, and Ezra argues back, "What do you think that Kanan does all the time?" But Hera comes in and cuts them off. they're not going after Kanan. And she even says, with so much pain in her voice, that they can't jeopardize the entire mission for one quote-unquote soldier. And that doesn't settle well with Ezra, who says, soldier, excuse you, he will be called either space dad or space husband on this ship. And Hera says, yeah, and space dad slash space husband made a choice and would want us to honor that. And Ezra runs out of the room. Chopper is in Kanan's room, missing his friend, and Ezra comes in and says that he has a plan to find Kanan, and Chopper is happy to help. What'd you think of Act 1?
That was pretty good.
I gotta remember all my notes, because I did this yesterday.
Just a few short notes. There's the music as it's been up to this point is like a lot of stuff from, you know, the original trilogy. They did a lot of the Hoth battle music in this one since they were in a walker.
Mm-hmm.
But it was nice. They did. It was variations on it. You know, they kept the main sort of stomping theme to it, but added nice little variations. It was nice. Hmm. And there was a neat shot of one of the walkers swiveling around with its gun turning at the same time while the camera was moving. That was just a really nice shot. And my only other note is when you see Fulcrum as a hologram, doesn't it remind you a lot of like Palpatine?
Yeah, a little bit.
Like a mysterious hooded figure giving orders. It's pretty funny. That's how Palpatine started out, and that's how the Rebels are starting out, with a hooded person going, "Good, here are your orders." So I thought that was a neat little visual reference, you know. It was just kind of neat. That's all I really have for this part.
And we can definitely talk more about Fulcrum next week, because even though I'm pretty sure we've already spoiled on the show somewhere, and just in case that we haven't, because we keep trying to not spoil too much of future seasons, just in case you're watching this for the first time, we'll definitely talk more about Fulcrum next week.
Yeah. You only have to make it till the next episode.
Actually, since we're talking about Fulcrum, I might as well do my Fulcrum note. So I understand why Fulcrum wants to protect Ezra, because Ezra is the future of the Jedi Order. He's also the voice behind the message that went out to everybody, and I get that. But I'm not quite buying Fulcrum telling Hera to let Kanan go. I understand why they're saying it, but at the same time, any Jedi is a precious resource right now. Any of them can inspire hope. We saw that in episode 1 when Kanan protected the Wookiees. Farkin even said it in last week's episode when he was all like, Jedi represent hope, even though I don't believe Jedi, but I kind of do, whatever. So there's no reason that it would have just came off a little bit differently if Fulcrum was like, you know, we'll try to find another cell to like go after Kanan and stuff like that. Or even like, there's no reason they couldn't do a smaller mission of just like Hera and Sabine, or Sabine and Zeb, to keep Ezra safe. Like, there's other options, but a lot of like me knowing who Fulcrum is, this came off really callous, because I know this person is like, any Jedi should be a precious resource right now.
That person also knows that, like, on some level, Kanan may be able to take care of himself too. He's not, you know, he's also a Jedi, so just because they have him doesn't mean they might keep him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they're, I mean, they're doing the math. It's very much similar to what's going on in Resistance right now, is everybody's, you know, on a need to know basis. And, you know, it would even be like, you know, Fulcrum could be planning a rescue of Kanan and doesn't want to tell these guys because doesn't want them to even get involved at all, you know? So you don't know what's going on. So, I mean, them telling them, okay, you guys leave Kanan alone, is just sort of telling them, you guys leave Kanan alone.
Yeah.
So it's hard to say what's going on, but it's the nature of the sort of sectioned off rebel units that you would have to do something like that. And I imagine Kanan and Hera have had many conversations where they're like, one of us might have to leave the other one behind, you know?
Oh, yeah. That is,
if that happens, we have to be ready to steel ourselves and be like, okay, let's, you know.
And you actually see Hera doing that multiple times in this episode.
It's like having a relationship at work. You have to be a professional in order for it to work, you know?
Yeah, like you definitely see multiple times where Hera is clearly hurt by saying stuff like, we can't sacrifice a whole bunch of people for one soldier. Like, that's a line where, like, that was painful for her to refer to Kanan as a soldier because that's her space husband.
Well, she's the one, yeah, she's probably the one who wants to go after him the most, you know.
Oh, yeah, more than any of them.
Of all of them, so, yeah.
She's the one that's known him the longest. But, anywho, I understand why Fulcrum was saying that, but at the same time, like, knowing who Fulcrum is, like, that came off just a touch callous to me, but I also get it, so.
You sort of gotta be callous.
Yeah, but not Alexander callous, waiting in wings for you. So.
No, yeah.
Well, my next note, it's just a silly little note with a silly little headcanon. In Rebel so far, Steve Bloom, who voices Zeb, also voices a lot of the background stormtroopers in the show. And I also noticed that they brought back Steve Bloom in Resistance to do the same thing as he voices stormtroopers in Resistance. So I just have a stupid little headcanon that all the stormtroopers, like the stormtrooper that he voices in Resistance are the kids or the grandkids of his trooper in Rebels.
Right. Clones.
Yeah, it's just a dumb headcanon, which is why they all sound the same. Like his Rebel stormtrooper had kids and then they ran off in the First Order. It's a dumb headcanon, but I love it. So when they are taking out the walker drivers at the beginning, Ezra says, "How you doing?" And then he knocks him out. That's the same first line that Kanan says in episode 1. And it's very fitting because they're looking for Kanan.
I did not notice that.
Yeah, I think Kanan says, "How's it going?" instead of "how you're doing," but it's that same kind of tone of like, "How you doing?" knocks him out. Like, and it's nice. I like that there are consequences to blowing up the communication tower last week and that it came up. Because, like, yeah, you were talking last week about how this is, like, completely hindering, like,
the Rebels. Kind of shooting themselves in the foot, yeah.
But at the same time, it's also hindering the Rebels because they can't use it either.
Yeah, but it also, I don't know, it just made them more, even more vulnerable by now they have to have droids which you can easily steal going back and forth like carting messages. It's really inefficient.
So I still like that there were like consequences to that happening for both the Empire and the Rebels, mm-hmm. because it's not like one of those things like it happened and then never touched on it again.
Well, like, that's usually how it is in shows like this. It's just like once it's done in the episode, we got it. You can just forget about it, especially if it's kind of like, wait a minute, you know, usually you don't hear anything else about it. So, yeah.
So I like that there. And, you know, it's kind of like a thing of like new shows, too. I've noticed that in like a lot of new animated shows, like something. Like, it all builds on itself from episode to episode. Like, there's a great example of Alex Hirsch, who is the creator of Gravity Falls, saying that, like, our episode's not episodic. Like, we remember things from earlier seasons.
Right.
And he was referring to, like, the episode The Time-Traveling Pig. And he was like, Mabel gets a pet pig in this episode. He's going to be in the rest of the season. It's not a one-shot thing. Like, Waddles is always going to be there. It's not... So, like, when... Mabel says in the episode, everything is different now. Everything is different now because she has this pet pig. And so, like, I love that, like, trend in, like, cartoons where it's not just a thing that's, like, forgotten or episodic. Like, it's all built on it. And I am glad. I love this trend in, like, new animation that does this. when they steal the walker and it's just careening through town... And there are townspeople screaming in horror and running away. All I could think about was, man, the Empire's going to take this moment and put it in propaganda and use it against them.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's hard to say, though. I guess people already know the Rebels exist, so I guess you would have to start demonizing. I would also be like, I would be torn between, like, I don't know if I want to even, you know, publicize them at all, you know, give them any, you know, any kind of credit either way, but
they didn't name them by name, but they did show their pictures last week.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was just like, that's the perfect moment of propaganda right there. And then my last note for Act One is it really does say a lot about Chopper's character through his actions this episode. He really much is a character that is showing, not telling, and he has to be because he's a droid. And it's just like little things and just like how in this act that just shows Chopper's character that he's not just this psycho murder droid. Like when they're all escaping on the Phantom, he stays behind on the walker because he keeps searching for Kanan, even though they don't have a connection, and Zeb has to physically carry them out of there. I mean, he stands in Kanan's room just standing there because he misses Kanan, but he doesn't say any words and stuff like that. So what I love how they write Chopper, because he is a character where his actions have to speak louder than words because he has no words.
It's just weird that he stayed there with no connection, because that doesn't make no sense.
I think, but he doesn't know if they would happen to come across connection. That's how I took it. I think he could have been
trying almost to, like, you know, it's almost like a droid, you know, being emotional over like self-preservation and logic, which does, you know,
but
it works in the story. It works dramatically in the story.
Yeah. Cause Chopper is such an interesting character because, like, he's easily probably, like, the comedy character of the entire show and stuff like that. But he has these, like, little moments where you actually get to see what kind of, like, heart he has, especially when it comes to, like, in, like, other characters. And how he might say that he, like, wants to, like, take over Zeb's room and stuff like that, but he actually does care for Zeb. And it's very nice, like, when we actually get to see those, like, kind of, like, quiet moments of Chopper or the non-murder droid side of Chopper, because they're done very well, but they're few and far in between, so when they do happen, they're very impactful.
Hope softening up to some AI.
Chopper is one of my favorite droids, so Chopper is, like, one of my, like...
Warming up to the AI, Hope.
No.
That's step one. That's how it always works. One of them just sort of worms their way into your heart, and then it's all over.
It's funny, too, because I like all the murder droids like K2 and Chopper.
Yeah, but, you know, I know you like the murder droid part of him, too. I know, you know, you like that bad boy aspect of Chopper.
Yeah, but it's fun. But that's all I have for Act 1.
All right.
So Act 2?
Act 2.
Sabine and Zeb aren't happy that they're going to keep on fighting without Kanan, and Sabine wonders if Kanan will tell the Empire about anything about them. And Hera says that Kanan doesn't know anything to tell. Suddenly, Space Kids roll out their secret plan against Space Mom. Chopper comes in to distract Hera while Sabine and Zeb happen to help Ezra look for batteries for his lightsaber. It's all a ruse, because Chopper cranks up all the alarms on the ship to cover the kids taking the Phantom without Hera knowing right away, and they fly away to start Ezra's plan. But Space Mom wasn't born yesterday, and she starts realizing that Chopper is acting mighty suspicious. Meanwhile, Evil Team Hot, being Callison Grande, and, well, Farkin is there too, but he is not a part of Evil Team Hot, and they're all interrogating Kanan. And Callus's tactics aren't working on Kanan. And Grande slides in dramatically going, "Let a professional handle this." And Callus grumbles off to the side.
And I'm Grande... wondering if Farkin is going to call... You know how last time we had the As You Wish from
Grande,
the Princess
yeah.
Bride? Now yeah. We got Farkin's hanging out with a farm boy.
I'm just gonna move on. Grande pulls his own Kylo Ren and uses the Force to inflict a huge amount of pain on Kanan. And Kanan is able to fend off the pain and even taunt Grande a little bit. But Grande pulls out all the torture guns and starts shocking him. Back with the Space Kids, they land at Visago's camp. And Visago knows that they're there about Kanan being captured. And even if he did know where Kanan was, Visago's not happy with the heroes anyway. All their stunts against the Empire made them crack down on Lothal more, and now Visago has to work twice as hard for them. and Ezra isn't fucking around today. He is ready to bargain with Kanan and his real identities, and he tells Visago point blank that Kanan is a Jedi. And Visago just laughs in their faces. When Ezra lifts a crate with the Force, Visago is all out of laughs. And Ezra says that if he helps them, then Visago will have a Jedi owing him a favor. And Visago says anything he wants, but and Ezra has no choice but to agree. And Visago brings Ezra onto his ship alone. Once inside, Visago said that since the comm tower got blown up last week, the Empire doesn't have any long-range communications at the moment. They've had to start using droid couriers to take data from the planet to the communication ships in orbit. And it's all sorts of data, including possibly prisoners. Visago isn't ready to collect today, so Ezra will be owing him that favor. And Ezra hurries outside all excited until he sees Space Mom, and Hera is pissed. What'd you think of that, too?
You're in trouble.
I love that moment. Like, you better have more than a hunch with what you just pulled. That line.
There's some nice shots in the ship when they're in the ship planning it. And when you see outside, like in the beginning, there's just this beautiful purple light. And it's like dawn.
Yeah.
And like the light, like every couple minutes when you see the outside, the colors and the angles of the sun are changing. So it was just really neat. They paid attention that it was sunrise and they made it like visually changing like it does. It was really neat. My only other note is fuck off, Callus Grande's in town. when he shows up and Tarkin's just sort of almost literally brushes Callus off to the side. You see Callus just sort of stand in the background for a couple seconds and then just sort of like slide off the screen.
I know.
He's just sort of like,
down.
I'm gonna get a glass of water right now, maybe.
I actually have a note about that, so I'm going to go ahead and say it then. Because I mentioned it last week, and I mentioned it last week, and I've said it in earlier episodes that I wish we got to see more of this tension with Imperial soldiers around Grande, because it's been hinted at and it's been nodded at, but we haven't seen it openly. I think if I remember, we know that there was a scene in a book with Admiral Constantine and Grande, and then a couple weeks ago, Callus said something like, well, the Grand Inquisitor can do his thing, but I have my plan. And so it's like, it's one of those, I lost my spot. And then we see it again in this interrogation scene. And it's just hinting that with Callus's methods failing, so they bring in Grande, which makes Callus glare him down. And it's just one of those threads I just kind of wish they developed more throughout the season, because spoiler for next week, put your spoilers on now in 3, 2, 1, Grande dies next week. Like, he's gone. And it's just one of those things that I wish they had developed more, because after season 2, you really don't have those enemy dark side users working for the Empire. And I think that's what makes the Inquisitors so interesting, because they're Force users that work for the Empire. And yeah, we get Maul, but Maul doesn't work for the Empire. He's working on his own. And so I think there's a really fascinating story that they keep just barely kind of hinting at, where normal Imperials like Callus and Tarkin and Constantine are working with these Force users, and they don't quite know how to, like, they all have these different relationships with them, and the lower level ones like Constantine and Callus don't quite know what to do around them. Tarkin's fine, he's dealt with Jedi, like, that's his thing, he's fine, he doesn't fucking care about them. But I think that there's a really interesting story about people like Tua and Callus and Constantine having to work with these Force users and not quite knowing what to do with it. And it's a story that they have sort of hinted at all season 1. We're going to see a little bit more hints around it in season 2 with the 7th sister and the 5th brother, but they never really get into that story. And that's a story that I really wish they got into more. And I feel like it's a missed opportunity, because it's there and I find it very interesting, but they never do it.
Eventually there's going to be a show from the Imperial point of view, or from the, you know, First Order point of view.
Can I tell you what I want? And I've said it on Twitter before, but I don't know if I've ever said it on the show. I can't remember. I want an Inquisitor's novel. Because I think I love that the novels can go into a lot of detail, and I want it broken into parts. So say there's like 11 Inquisitors. So every Inquisitor gets a part, and it's maybe like four or five, like three, four or five chapters, and it's their lives as Jedi and their fall to the dark side, and then them as Inquisitors. So like the first one would be Grande. So it'd be him as a Jedi Temple Guard, and like why he fell to the dark side, and like him in Order 66, and like him killing his fellow Temple Guards, and then coming to like Palpatine and Vader and stuff like that. And it can cross over with the dark, with the dark Darth Vader comic that he was in and stuff like that. Then like part two is the second brother and or sister. Part three is second third brother and or sister. Then we get to the fifth sister and we see like where she came from, and like, or the seventh sister, I mean, and the fifth brother. And like, that's what I want, is a novel where it's broken into parts for each Inquisitor, and they each get three or four chapters talking about their lives in the Empire or their lives as the Jedi and their fall to the dark side, and like really showing who they are. That's what I want. I will write it for you, Lucasfilms. Give me the permission. I'm fucking ready to write that story now.
Let's do it.
Give me permission. I will write it for you. I want
she'll do it.
I will. I want it.
She can make it dirty for you too if you want.
Yeah.
You can cut those parts out and just keep them around the Lucasfilm offices.
Yeah. I mean, so like that's what I really want, because like a show would be nice, but I feel like a novel would really get into like into that those details way more and stuff like that. So that's, I want an Inquisitor's novel so bad. My headcanon, Grande's real name was Alexei. It's based off a poem called The Grand Inquisitor by, what's his name? Todorovsky, I think is his name. He was a Russian poet. I think the last name is Todorovsky. I think.
He's got that sort of Eastern, a little Eastern European about him, but he's also got a little bit of tapeworm about him, too.
But yeah, I'm ready.
Those teeth look like they're about to attach themselves to your like intestine or something.
Oh, Powans are carnivores. For mine and Megan's roleplay, I've done a lot of research on Powans. They live for centuries and they're carnivores. But yeah, I did
obviously.
Notice, I did notice though in Gathering Forces when I freeze framed a couple pictures of his faces, he does have back molars, so I'm assuming that he could like eat other foods too.
He could still eat a carrot if he wanted to, but yeah, those teeth are definitely for meat for sure.
Yeah, he's pounds are strictly carnivores, so anyway. Head cannons off to the side. I like how this episode puts into focus how important the episode Out of Darkness was. That was the one with Sabine and Hera facing off against the Furnax. Uh-huh. Because Sabine was questioning following orders blindly, and like she didn't want to follow orders, and Hera told her like there's a reason that there's a need to know basis when it comes to their missions, and this proves it. Kanan is captured, and yeah, this is the exact reason why, because Kanan literally doesn't know anything.
No, you see the point where they're all realizing, yeah, I think we actually got all we can out of this guy. You know, we're all, you know, I think this, like, I don't think, you know, you could tell that they're like, well, maybe he doesn't know, maybe there isn't anything more, you know, than these guys, you know, that you could tell they're like, I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing, but you could tell they're thinking, maybe he doesn't have anything to hide. So
I think that if the only really good information that they could get out of Kanan is all their names, because I don't think they know all their names. Because Kallus names all of them.
Not going to do you a lot of good, though.
Yeah, because Kallus in whatever episode that had the Senator in it, he names all of them except for Hera. He doesn't know Hera's name. And then Kanan might could tell Grande where the Jedi Temple is. And that's about it. That's about all he could tell them. That would be new knowledge to them that they don't already know is Hera's name and where the Jedi Temple is.
Yeah.
Maybe that someone like old Joe gives them jobs for the Empire, but even then, like that's small things of a bar owner giving them jobs.
Yeah, no, yeah. That's all stuff
Lando has a
that's all stuff they can just sort of assume, you know?
Yeah, like Lando has a puffer pig. Oh God.
Yeah. Right. Right.
So, like, this is the exact reason why Hera was saying what she was saying in the episode Out of Darkness. This is why. And I like that it really reinforces that episode. Also, when Vanessa Marshall says the line, "He doesn't know anything," oh, that delivery is perfect. Like, it's so quiet, it's so painful, and it's just a very perfect delivery of that line, of her just going, "He doesn't know anything."
Yeah.
Oh, so good. I got chills. Grande is not hot when he's torturing Kanan. He's a mean man, but he's a cute mean man.
I liked it.
I liked it, too. My last solid note is, it's kind of a question for you. So what do you think of Ezra outing him and Kanan to Visago? Do you think it's a smart move, a desperate move, a stupid move, or all of the above?
Oh, it's definitely all of the above.
It's all of the above for me, too.
Yeah, I think desperate sort of covers all of those.
Yeah.
It's sort of the backed up against the wall thing. But it does the trick.
And I feel that way, too. Like,
or at least it gets them to the next step, anyway.
Yeah.
It gives them a concrete plan that they can start to work with.
And I feel like that way, too. Like, is it stupid? It's hella stupid to tell a crime lord that you're a Jedi. But is it smart? Yeah, because it's got Visago's attention. And as I said in Act 1, Jedi are precious resources right now. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it is a move that's out of desperation. So while it's a little stupid and smart at the same time, it's clearly a desperate move. So I actually really like that move out of Ezra. Like, I think it's... Sometimes you have to take those bold chances, and it could come back and bite them. Visago's a crime lord. I think actually someone said early in the series that Visago would sell his own mother for the right price. I feel like Hera said that at some point in the season.
Yeah, I mean, Visago is not far off from Hondo, really.
But I feel like Hondo, Visago's a crime lord and a smuggler. Hondo was a pirate. And I feel like Hondo still had that little bit of that pirate's code. Like, there was still kind of, like, a morality around him. Like Obi-Wan came and helped him, so Hondo helped Obi-Wan back.
Because right, there was but that... He still sold a bunch of people out at other points, too. So,
and
you
we
know.
Can't forget that Hondo did try to kill some children.
Right, right. Yeah, but, yeah. But, so it's there's in that moral gray area.
Yeah, but I still also feel like with Hondo, like Obi-Wan helped him, so he then helped Obi-Wan back. But once that debt was paid, Hondo totally saw Obi-Wan. But he still had that debt to repay. And I feel like Visago's not quite there. I feel like if it was the other way around, like, I'm not sure if Visago would repay that debt, unlike Hondo. So, but that's all I have for Act 2. Did you have anything else?
No, that's all for me.
All right. Act 3?
Act 3.
Space Mom continues to be pissed off at her space son as they head back to the Ghost. And Ezra explains that he has a tip that is a maybe, but they don't want to give up on Kanan. And Hera's like, "You think I want to give up on my space husband? Newsflash, kiddo. I've known him way longer than any of you." "I know," Ezra says, "and that's why we should take this risk." And Hera sees that her crew is all on board, and she changes her mind and is in whatever plan Ezra has. Ezra has a plan to grab the Imperial droid and swap it out with Chopper to go on the shuttle to the communication ship in orbit to find out info about Kanan. And Chopper is like, "Are you out of your bleep-leaping mind? I am orange." And Sabine is going to give him a pretty paint job to get by. And Chopper agrees, and they're all in on this plan for Kanan. Meanwhile, Kanan is still being tortured. And Farkin is like, "Ugh, he's starting to smell like bacon. Hold up on the shockies a moment." And Grande lets Kanan go. And Kanan and Grande are impressed that Kanan is so resilient. Then Grande says the million-dollar thought. Kanan doesn't know where any of the other rebel cells are. Which is what Hera wanted the entire time. And Tarkin decides to transfer Kanan to another location. A location that is hot, with lava, and a big black castle that we saw in Rogue One. and the rest of the crew of the, back with the rest of the space family, they take out some stormtroopers and steal the Imperial droid. Chopper, with a slick new coat of paint, rolls up to the shuttle and hops right on, and they take off and head for orbit. And the Ghost is falling behind and lock in on Chopper's beacon. They can only wait and rely on him now. On board the light cruiser, the officer on the bridge tells Chop to plug in and give him the data. But Chopper finds what he needs while the Imperials think that he's a malfunctioning droid and Chopper sends out his signal. Hera and the space kids get the signal and they get ready to rumble. And they leave the Imperial droid with Zeb because he's intimidating. On the ship, the Imperials check out Chopper's encryption codes, they fall under attack and Chopper burns the droid port. And Hera and the crew attack the light cruiser, but they're under heavy fire. When part of the Ghost catches fire, the Imperial droid puts it out, and Zeb's like, "Oh, I like you." And Chopper gets an airlock and blows himself and some other stormtroopers out into space. He has his Wally. I made sure you taught me well to write blow out into space. He has his Wally moment and uses his rockets to fly through space and meets up with the Ghost. Hera turns the ship around and plummets back into orbit. Once back in the atmosphere, they welcome Chopper back and tell him that he did a great job. And the Imperial droid is there, and Zeb says that the other droid was a big help and that they should keep him, Chopper shoves him out the door and waves a happy bye Felicia at him. But that's okay because the Imperial droid got adopted by a family of lothcats to live happily ever after. And the crew comes together, and Space Mom says that she's proud of Ezra stepping up and taking the lead. Sabine cuts it all short, finding something in the data. Kanan is on Tarkin's ship, but is set to leave soon for Mustafar. Bum, 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 until next week for the season finale. All right, Chris, what'd you think of Act 3?
This was before Rogue One, wasn't it?
It was before Rogue One. This was before Force Awakens.
Yeah, so, wow. Mm-hmm. You know, we didn't know it at this time, but they were reaching towards, like, if Rogue One would have come out first, we'd know where that basically they're going to Vader's pad, you know, like watching it this time. I'm like, oh, shit, they're going to where Vader is, you know, that's this clubhouse. But I, you know, when the first time watching this, you wouldn't know that. You're just like, oh, Mustafar. That's right. That's from the prequel trilogy.
Isn't that funny? Because so it's also in Clone Wars, too.
Well, it doesn't make it as like impending doom. There's more of a feeling of impending doom if you know that Vader's sitting waiting for him at Mustafar, you know?
I just like
saying Mustafar.
There's also, like, we saw Mustafar in Clone Wars in the kid arc where Cad Bane was stealing the kids. But again, it wasn't Vader's castle. It was just, like, a facility. But I do like how at this time... is it at this time? Yeah, I would say probably about this time. Vader's palace has been built. We don't know exactly the timeline of Charles Soule's comic where you see Vader building his castle. But I would say about this time his castle's been built. So, yeah, there is a much bigger implication of they're probably going to Vader. And not just some random facility on Mustafar.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, now I know it, but like when I watched it the first time, I associated with the two together, you know, but.
I know that you've already watched next week's episode. I haven't watched next week's episode. Guys, we're doing two episodes this weekend, which is also why we're not doing feedback next week. So we don't get ahead of our feedback, just to give you guys a heads up now. Do they ever actually land on Mustafar in next week's episode, or do they stay on the ship?
I do not believe we only see Mustafar from space.
Okay,
and
so
it's
yeah.
Beautiful, but yeah, but we only see it from space. Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, like there's this implication now with Rogue One that they're probably going to Vader's house.
I only have a few notes. One of them was just like, Chopper gets to murder again. And he shouldn't have murdered that droid. I don't understand why the first thing, you would want to at least tap and draw out all the, I mean, whatever information that droid had, it might be very useful
intel.
Yeah,
everyone else does, but Chopper's a psycho murder droid. He doesn't care.
Well, I know, but they should have thought of it before that. They should have been like, hey, just turn this guy off and we'll take his head and pull out his memory chip, you know?
He's probably full of good stuff. Yeah, but they also haven't really had time to do that.
he's probably full of good stuff. But yeah, I mean, I would have just shut him off from the get-go. As soon as they had him, they would have been like, okay, let's shut this guy off and throw him over in the corner there with the near the clothes hamper. Let him sit for the rest of the... But anyway, but that wouldn't have been as entertaining as what
Chopper shoving him out the door.
And also, when you push him out the door, he's got to fly around their ship and take a look at the crew and everything. And now he's sitting there probably with a little GPS, Imperial GPS beacon. So he's still got his information, and he could give the Imperials a little bit of info on the crew, you know?
That's actually what Dave Filoni talked about in Rebels Recon, is that, like, he's so far out there away from everything that his battery would probably die before he gets back to anywhere. So he's like, he just becomes a monument for Lothcast to sit on.
Or yeah, you know, but you'd think he'd have some sort of tracking beacon on him, you know.
But their communications tower is down.
Okay.
That communication tower that you hate so much.
Okay, what else do I got here? The only other note I had is, there's sort of a switch going on in this, where like a lot of the music in this has been really from the original trilogy, and but now we're referencing Mustafar, and then they have this just short shot here in here out through the cockpit that. It was just very reminiscent to the opening shots of episode one, where that you know, just the random pilot is piloting their ship onto the Trade Federation ship. And I just noticed we're sort of moving into a little bit of feel of some of the prequel trilogy in here too. And the music was... And we'll find in the next episode, the music starts picking up some elements from the prequel trilogy, instead of being like really, really like lots of the, you know, just familiar hits from the original Star Wars music, which, you know, they were trying to get back to that original trilogy because they were getting back to the Skywalker story with Force Awakens. So it's just strange. They're incorporating a little bit more of it into the music, which is good because they've been really heavily relying on playing whole chunks of, you know, just original Star Wars score sort of.
I feel like once it gets into later seasons, like Rebels kind of finds its own music.
Yes. Like, so... No. There's a point where Rebels it just will use little touches of familiar themes here and there, and they'll use them when they're really pertinent. Whereas, like in the this first season of Rebels, I mean, there's whole chunks where they just basically are doing Ben's death and TIE fighter attack. You know, it was music that was actually even timed out for something else visually, but it's also so Star Wars-y that when you put it on there, it does work for what it's doing. But to me, it was a little overly familiar. And as we go on with the music, it becomes less and less of that and more of its own thing. I think there's a particular musical piece that we're coming up to in later seasons where that's sort of a turning point. And I think like they realized it, because I remember when it happened, they were just like, listen to this piece of music from Rebels that I believe it was a Kevin Kiner piece, and I remember playing it going, "Ooh, that's really nice," and it was totally original. And I think
it was probably Into the Star Cluster.
Yes, and from that point on, you know, it started becoming more like that and becoming more of its own thing as the show became more of its own thing too, you know, as the characters started, you know, you didn't have to make it as referency to the original trilogy. You could really just like use the characters created for the show as the backbone for it. So yeah, this is where that's sort of starting to happen.
Yeah,
but that's all I got for part three.
So for my notes, I just realized one way that I could tell Grande wasn't a Sith he has to have robots to make his own lightning, because you know that Vader or Palpatine would have just force lightning that shit themselves.
Yeah. Made it personal.
Yeah. Again, this is kind of what I was talking about in Act 2. It's still so sad that Hera's plan works so well. Kanan literally doesn't know anything about other rebel cells, and he still gets tortured, but this is what that chain of command was for.
Yeah, he's going to get tortured anyway. They're the Imperials. Yeah, Tarkin is not going home tonight without a little torture.
Yeah. So when Chopper, after they take the Imperial droid and swap out Chopper, Chopper is rolling up to the Imperial shuttle, and you see it from the side, and it's kind of, like, pointed, and, like, the wings are up and stuff like that. And I realized that from that side shot, it kind of looks like K-9 from Doctor Who.
Doctor?
Doctor?
I would love to have my own working K-9. I loved K-9. He was all rusty and cables hanging out of him. It was great.
I know.
All he could do is lift up his neck up and down and shoot his laser beam. Which was a continuous beam.
But it was so cute. I mean.
Yeah. Oh, he had a tail too. So he had another movable part.
Yeah. So I just, the Imperial shuttle from the side looked so much like K-9. I was just like, K-9. So this kind of goes back to what I was saying now too. About how I wish, like, they built more of, like, Grande and stuff like that into the stuff. But then I realized that the interrogation scene would have been a great time to do it. Because I kind of wish there was a moment where Grande and Kanan got a chance to talk one-on-one. No Tarkin, no Kallus in the room. It was just them. Because I was talking about this with Megan, that Grande and Kanan are really foils to each other. One started in a high position as a temple guard and fell to the dark side. One started in his lowest point as a Padawan and rises to be a Jedi. So their stories are opposites, but they have a lot in common. Like, they were both raised in the Jedi Temple. They remember the old ways of the Jedi and how it used to go. So I just wish they had, like, a conversation in this interrogation scene where they talked about Grande's motive a little bit. Because we really don't find out why Grande chose to become an Inquisitor until the Darth Vader comics that just ended last year. And that they came out well after his demise, and after the end of Rebels. Like, Rebels was over, and we finally got Grande's backstory in a comic book. And I just, like, would have really loved a scene where the two of them just were like, Kanan's like, why are you doing this? And Grande's like, you don't even know.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, is it can't be, like, in an interrogation scene, you can't get that story, because Grande, like, it's a power story. You know, function there where Grande's at, he's asking the questions. It would be cool to have Kanan ask the question, but Grande wasn't gonna, like, wouldn't tell him anything, because then Kanan would basically be taking control of the interrogation.
Or it could have even been a thing where he was giving information that wasn't, like, really super important. If Kanan was like, you know, I can tell that you used to be a Jedi. Why are you doing this? And Grande just being like, you don't understand the Jedi. Like, you don't know what they became. Like, you were so young.
Yeah.
And so, like, I feel like that was just another missed opportunity to, like, really, because I love the Inquisitors. I really do. I love the Inquisitors. I love the Seventh Sister. I love the Fifth Brother. I love all the Inquisitors. But the more I think about it is, they really don't have a really... Their story is very shallow in the TV show. It's so shallow. They don't really have motives. They're just like that. They're almost borderline mustache-twirling villains.
Right.
Because they just don't have motives or backgrounds. They're just being evil to be evil because Vader told them to. And their only real motivation is kill the Jedi. We hate the Jedi. And, like, that is fine in older TV series. It's not fine in this day and age of television, where we're in a golden age of animation right now. Like, that would never fly in shows like Avatar The Last Airbender, Gravity Falls, Steven Universe, like Dragon Prince. Like, that doesn't fly anymore. And I feel like, oh, Megan's going to be so proud of me because I always argue her on this. I feel like we should at least get something shown to us in the television show, and as much as I love the Darth Vader comic, I shouldn't have to read the Darth Vader comic to understand Grande's motivations.
Yeah, I know a little bit more about them because I've seen this before, but still, they're almost more like just sort of story drivers at this point. And to have somebody who's not Sith but can still wield a lightsaber, you know, and do some Force stuff that's evil, you know, they just sort of seem like not necessary, but something they threw in to do and
because
not
they could, it feels like they used them because they couldn't have Vader in every episode.
Right. I don't think they ever, and it wasn't as bad with Grande, especially like since it's sort of in and out. But then when more of them show up, it started getting a little, you know, that was, I think, the biggest point of any complaint during any of the Star Wars cartoons right now is when when you got the guys helicoptering around with their lightsabers, and that people were just like, come on.
Yeah.
But like with a little more background in history, it would fly better, you know, so to speak.
Because actually here, like in season one, he's only referred to as the Inquisitor or the Grand Inquisitor. It's not until season two when two more show up that you realize there's more than just him.
Right.
So as of right now, at this point when the show was first running, we didn't know about the rest of the Inquisitorius. So it works here because I was like, okay. And as I'm reading like the Heir to the Empire trilogy and stuff like that, they mention Palpatine, Vader, and their Dark Jedi. So this isn't an unheard of thing before, because it's been in the EU canon that there were Dark Jedi working as Jedi hunters. So this isn't unheard of. But at the point of like in this story, it just like, I just wish there was more of the like background on the Inquisitors, because I find them incredibly fascinating with so much potential for really good stories. It's just never addressed. And then after season two, it's gone. Like, they're gone. There's, like, no reference to them ever again. And apparently, like, they're all dead and they're all gone. Like, there's no more Inquisitorius after season two because you don't ever see them in Rogue One. They don't come up in season three and season four. They're apparently all gone by A New Hope. So, like, it's just this, like, little chunk of, like, time where they're here and we never get their full story. And on one hand, I kind of like not having their full story because I like imagining what it could be. But on the other hand, it's really frustrating.
Well, that's the thing, though. Even like when imagining what it could be still doesn't make them fit it. It still makes them feel like story creations, you know. So,
yeah.
So it's like, you know, it's when I try to think of like, okay, how do these guys fit in here? I have to really have stretch sometimes with my imagination to figure out how these guys got in there without ever being referenced anywhere else, or you know, showing up anywhere else, or if they did, how they could have disappeared, you know. Think about it too much, I usually come to the conclusion, and I'm sorry because I know you love Grande, but they probably could have done without him.
They could have, yeah. Like, they really could have. Like, I'm glad he's here, but without having, you know, I think that the Darth Vader comic does them better than Rebels, which is, makes me really sad to say, because you actually see them training, you actually see their function, you actually see them working, and you get more time with them, and you get more of their backstories. You get Grande's backstory about why he failed, why he wants to murder Jacka Sanu, and like it works in the Darth Vader comics, and you actually see several of them get killed off. So it makes sense of like why they're not running around, because A, they're trying to one up each other. They're not afraid to like stab their friend to get out alive, because they do that in the Darth Vader comic. You see one get killed in the Ahsoka novel. I mean, so like it works in like the other media, which fills in these forms, but it's not working in the show that's presented to us here.
Right, where they're first presented.
Yeah. And I don't know if it's a thing of where they're not wanting to get too dark and stuff like that because it's a kid's show, because the show doesn't really shy away from dark stuff. We just saw two Imperials get beheaded last week. It doesn't shy away from that kind of thing. So it's just more frustrating now than anything. And it might be a little bit of my complaint that I have with Resistance, where sometimes it feels like there's too many characters to really dive into any. And I have, That's probably my biggest complaint of Resistance. I like all the characters, but there's a lot of characters. You have all the members of Team Fireball. You have all the aces. You have all the pirates.
Well,
you have the First Order.
That's the nature of it, though. It's set in a fixed place. You know, it's not going planet to planet. You know, you get off it every once in a while and go someplace when Poe Dameron shows up. But for the most part, it's, you know, it's set in a giant cantina. So it should be, you know, that's what it would be like living there. You wouldn't have time to get to know everybody. The longer you live there, the longer you stay with the show, the more chance you're going to get to meet the people on the station, you know?
Yeah.
So, and you know, you see the ones that someday they're probably going to become a character you get to know, because you'll see them like just in passing a couple times, you know, like the Imperial, the ex-Imperial pilot, you know. Someday we're going to get to know him. Someday he's going to figure into his story. But at this point, he hasn't crossed paths yet. But he's there. Yeah. And it would be like if you lived there and you saw him, you'd be like, you know, what's that guy's, you know, well, you'd know sort of who he was because he's one of the, you know, racers. But at the same time, you'd be like, that's got to be an interesting person. Or you'd be like, that's kind of an intimidating person or whatever. But until you met them, they would just be sort of somebody you were familiar with and saw. So I sort of like that aspect of it, the sort of Wild West town aspect of it.
Yeah, but sometimes I feel like they give us, I think a lot of it is that they do a really good job with those Imperial characters in season 3 and 4, because a lot of it is because of Kallus, because we're seeing the Empire from Kallus' point of view, so we get to see a lot of how the Empire works through him, and it's really, really well done, but the part of the Empire that we really don't get to see is how Force users work in the Empire, and that's where I feel like it was a very missed opportunity in season 1 and season 2, because after season 2, there are no more Force users in the Empire.
Well, they might be doing that to keep them more scary, you know? The less you know about them, the more frightening they are. So, you know, so if you know too much about them, it might take some of the mystery away from them. So yeah, it's maybe just trying to keep them dark and mysterious.
But to quote Veruca Salt from Willy Wonka, I want it now!
But not the band Veruca Salt. The original, the OG Veruca Salt.
I want it now! Daddy, I want a golden goose! Chris, I want Grande backstory in a novel! I want it now!
Yeah, I hope you know where that ends, though.
And me writing fanfiction? Correct. That's exactly where it ends. With me writing fanfiction. All right, well, my next note is, I love that whenever they need to scare something, they just give it to Zeb. First it was the puffer pig, and now it's the droid.
Yeah.
Like, here, Zeb. But I also feel bad, because Zeb's Wookie such a big softy.
Wookie style, they do that with Wookiees, too.
I know, they just give it to Zeb.
Kind of racist, actually.
So, after, what did you just say?
I said it, Hope. It's kind of racist.
It's kind of specious, thank you. God damn it, Chris. So, God. You have me derailed a little bit. After they pick up Chopper from his Wally moment, and, you know, they have the hangar door open and, like, Hera's just plummeting into the atmosphere. That entire scene is just really awesome. Because, like, they just have the door open and it's just that all it is Chopper holding on. And it's, I was like, one, they had to seal off the rest of the ship so nothing else gets blown out of it. But that's just a really, really cool scene of her coming out to that atmosphere. And then once they're like in the atmosphere and they're coasting and the doors just open, there's a nice lighting coming out from down below. Everyone's lit from below and it's really, really nice. And they also left the door open for Chopper to shove the droid out, which is great. Like, that entire sequence was just really awesome.
Yeah, it had a really nice feel of movement to it.
Yeah, you could feel, like, the pressure of, like, Chopper just trying to hold on as they're entering the atmosphere.
Well, like, even when he got inside the ship, he had to still keep his engines on to keep up with it, you know? So he was still in the ship and still flying to be at the same speed of the ship. And, you know, his momentum didn't become the ship's momentum until he could grab onto something. So it was just, it was actual real physics, you know, involved instead of usually Star Wars physics. So it was neat.
Yeah. My next note is, aw, Chopper, our wonderful murder droid, just shoves him out the door. And my last note is, I remember the first time I watched this episode, I was on the edge of my seat the entire time because I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't know if Kanan was going to live or die. And I remember the first time I watched this episode, it was really tense, like, the entire time. Now on my second viewing, it's still really good. But when I thought about it, it's not really much more than the average episode. It's just really a lot of setup for next week. It's pretty much just another average episode because I know what's going to happen and I know that Kanan's going to be okay. So kind of like in hindsight, I wish they had just a little bit more time in Act 3 of Chopper spying on the ship, like him, like, trying to get by, like, doors and stuff. I think that would have been a really nice thing to do because this is really our first time seeing Chopper solo. So I think it would have been cool if they had just a little bit more time in Act 3, just giving Chopper more time spying in the ship.
I thought it would have been fun if he was just sort of going and, like, plugging into ports and then setting things to, like, burn out. And just, like, going through the ship and just, like, setting, you know, just generally disabling it slowly as he moved through it, you know, and then it would all sort of go off at once.
Yeah.
But it still worked out pretty good.
Yeah, it's still really good. I mean, this isn't a bad episode, but, like, on the second viewing, it just doesn't have as much suspense as it had the first time I watched it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, sometimes when you watch something, even if you know it's going to happen, like, it still has that built-in suspense that you still feel. I didn't feel it on this time round, so it was still a good episode, though. But that's all I have for Act 3, so do you have anything else for the episode?
No.
I'll wrap up this puppy, Chris.
You want me to score it up?
I do.
Well, last week, remember, you said it's been a long time since I actually dropped my score because of you.
Really?
Yep, from an 8.5 to an 8.
What made you drop your score?
You know, I just, as I was thinking about it, it is kind of an average episode, you know, for a two-parter, especially. Three-parter, technically, you know, I think of course, it's building up for the next part, so it's a lot of build up. The action sequences are very nice in it, and it's pretty to look at, so it gets, you know, 0.5 above just sort of an average episode, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. For me, like, it's a pretty good episode. It's not the greatest episode, but it's not
bad. And
that
I gave
either.
Away your score, too, I just realized.
Oh, that's fine. Because, like you said, it's really just a lot of setup for next week. I do like watching Hera make really hard choices. We really didn't talk much about Hera in this episode, but I really enjoyed Hera on this episode and watching her as a leader having to make those really hard choices and how it affects her. So I do like seeing that. I wish we did get more of Chopper's spy story. But man, I just really feel like they are missing great story opportunities with Grande and the Inquisitors, and they're going to keep doing that all through season two. So you better believe this is a point that's going to keep coming up for me all through season two. I also really like that Ezra added his and Kanan's secret to Visago, because it's a nice thing to set up future storylines, so that kind of slid in there. So overall, I mean, it's a fine episode. My average score is usually a 7, but I think it's a little bit better than average, so I gave it a 7.5 out of 10.
Yeah, it was, I mean, the action scenes are really nice in this.
They're really nice. Like, that's really what that extra 0.5 was for, because there's a lot of beautiful visuals in this episode. It's a really pretty, pretty episode.
Beautiful deals.
Well, as always, we would love to hear your feedback. We would love to hear your feedback on iTunes, Twitter, on the Two True Freaks Freaks Facebook page. I can't talk. Especially on iTunes, because when you rate and review the show on iTunes, it helps people find the show. It's been a little hot bit of a hot minute since we've had a review on iTunes, so if you haven't reviewed us over there, hop on over there and let us know what you think or don't think or stuff. This week, our feedback comes from the Two True Freaks Facebook page for our episode covering Path of the Jedi. Just to give you a heads up, there's a line separating. The first three are a conversation together. The rest of them are solo. So that's why that line is there.
All right. The first one we got is from Gene Hendricks, who says, FYI.
Excuse you. His real name is Gene the Podcast Machine. Come on.
He is Gene the Podcasting Machine.
Do, Gene.
I'm building up to it. There's obviously going to be many Gene references in this yeah, endpoint, so I wanted to build up to the
his real name is Gene the Podcast Machine.
Dun, 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 dun.
Gene.
All right. Go on. So that guy says, FYI, Luke was on Dagobah for a good amount of time, for my information. Is that for anybody who doesn't know what FYI means? LOL means laugh out loud too. Remember, the Falcon's hyperdrive didn't work, so they had to limp to Bespin at a relatively slow pace. That's why Boba Fett was able to figure out where they were going, get that information to Vader, and have everyone arrive there and hide before the Falcon showed up. But it's still just like a few days, you know, 3 days maybe.
Yeah, I think when we were talking about Empath of the Jedi, we were saying it was like maybe a day. But it was still a few days.
Yeah. And Gene Hendricks replies again, one of my major problems with the new trilogy is how time is sped up. In Star Wars, it took quite a while to get from Tatooine to Alderaan, long enough that the ship was on autopilot and everybody was relaxing. In the new movies, you blink and they're halfway across the galaxy. Yeah. And you look up in the galaxy and you can see every planet that might happen to explode, you know, from every point in the galaxy. Yeah, that was definitely a J.J. Abrams speed things up thing, you know, where hyperdrive is sort of instantaneous.
I find that as a very common complaint among my Star Wars friends, too, is that everything is so fast in the new trilogy.
Yeah. I just go with it. Just go with it, man. And, okay, the next one is from Aaron Henley. And he says, yeah, me too. Hey, maybe they finally had a breakthrough in hyperspace technology after how many centuries? By the way, the whole hyperspace tracking debacle with The Last Jedi wasn't because it was done. It was how it was done. We had always known there was tracking devices that allowed ships to be tracked after leaving hyperspace. Falcon to Yavin 4, Slave 1 to Geonosis, etc. The problem people had was, since we didn't see any devices latch onto the Resistance ships, how did the First Order know where they ended up? Now that we know the Empire was investigating that tech during the Rebellion era, it's fine, but so many people miss that line of Jyn's and Rogue, that the fact got drowned out in the outcry.
And we also see it in Rebels, too, because we saw that a few weeks ago, and I think at Empire Day to Gathering Forces, we saw Grande mm-hmm. use it, too.
Mm-hmm.
But,
well, that was more of a something that they planted on a ship, whereas in Last Jedi, they just were able to track them, you know? They were able to lock onto them and know where they were going when they went into hyperspace. And instead of, so, you know, they had that much they could immediately go after him. So, but
for me,
anyway,
like,
I
understand the argument, but I can also rationalize that 30 years later that they could have had a technology breakthrough, but it's just not presented in a clear way. So I do see both sides of this argument.
Right. Yeah. Oh, it's definitely something I noticed and noted. All right. And we got Aaron Henley again, and we're back to Rebels. This episode is when I fell in love with Rebels. It felt like classic Star Wars mythology. It was pretty unsettling to see the dead masters whose Padawan failed their trials, but that showed the trust Kanan had in Ezra, and every master would have to have with their Padawan, too. The Lothal Temple seemed more in line with the original goals of the Jedi, trust in the Force and in each other, letting the Force guide you, versus the more dogmatic and practical views being taught at the main temple on Coruscant.
I will say this, like, again and again and again throughout this entire series. I feel like Rebels does getting the Jedi right. Kanan is the Jedi done right. And I will say it before, and I've said it again, and I'll say it again and again. The Rebels is the Jedi done right. Go on.
All right. I wasn't the biggest fan of Pudgy Yoda, but he's grown on me.
No.
Until the very end of the show. I want to fat shame Yoda, but whatever. Till the very end of the show, I always started thinking after this episode that the other Yoda references in Empire were either Ezra or Kanan, since they needed a Sith killer and they were rapidly running out of time. Great episode and one of my top favorites of the entire show. And now we move on to Paul C. Kelly, who says,
"Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. From this episode, I got the thought that maybe there was a debate between Yoda and Obi-Wan as to who might be the future Redeemer Saver of the galaxy. It appears Yoda had been taking a liking to Ezra over Luke because Ezra resisted the dark side of the Force. No dark side. As Yoda had done in the final arc of Season 6, Clone Wars, as we see later, Luke fails in the cave pretty miserably.
But does he
fail? Wah, wah.
Does he fail, really?
Yeah. Failure's necessary. No, he does. Yeah. It's subjective. Of course, at that point, Ezra's whereabouts are unknown, but I bet Yoda was thinking, wish Ezra was here, I do. Obi-Wan, on the other hand, had such an attachment to his experiences with Anakin, he may have had more hope for Luke either way. Oh, yeah. Yoda in Empire, the boy has no patience. He is too old. Will he finish what he begins? You are reckless. No, no, there is no why. I like saying Yoda and Paul C. Kelly voices.
It's actually in the book, from a certain point of view, Yoda flat out freaking says, I don't want to train Luke. I want to train Leia. She's the one that's more disciplined and ready for it now. Uh-huh. And it was Obi-Wan's ghost that's like, no, you need to train Luke. And Yoda was like, fine, I guess I'll train Luke then. But he wanted to actually train Leia first because she was more fit with, like, what classic Jedi were to Yoda.
Right, right.
And girl she was.
On the second viewing with the Yoda arc in mind, I realized that, Obi-Wan was just like, I'm keeping Yoda away from her.
Yeah.
Okay, Yoda, whatever, man.
Bring in Princess Leia. Train her, Yoda will.
Okay, dude. Alright. On second viewing with the Yoda arc in mind, I realized that Ezra did really good in the temple, though. Yeah, he did. Compared to Luke, actually, he did. First time he seemed like he was a novice, which he was, but for his first time he passed what he was supposed to. Etc. Oh, yeah. Etc.
We didn't choose our candidates.
Yeah, like, Ezra actually came to a realization in his test. It's candy time.
I kind of want to do the Kinders.
The Kinders. Okay.
It looks like a little Kit Kat.
Okay.
Like a single serve Kit Kat.
Oh, wow.
So if you don't know what we're doing, Chris hates American Kit Kats. So our friend Dario, who is Chris's co-podcaster for Eat It and Beat It, sends us candy from all over the world to review. And this week, we're doing the Kinder.
It's Italian.
But I don't know if that's the other one. There's two Kinders in there, so I'm just checking.
Mine is orange.
Mine's orange, too. There's another one that's bigger. Not just this one. I don't know where this Kinder is from. It may or may not be Italian, so yay! But it looks like a single-serve Kit Kat bar.
It has nothing written on it except Kinder.
Yeah. Oh, it's good.
What is this filling?
I don't know.
Kind of a creamy filling.
But it's in, like, little parts. It has that flavor of, like, something I've noticed in all the European chocolates that we've eaten. It's something I can't quite put my finger on it, but there's almost like an underlying plastic taste.
an underlying what?
Plastic taste.
Plastic?
Hmm. But maybe that's just how chocolate is supposed to taste. And I'm not used to that kind of chocolate. But it's good.
I don't know.
But I've noticed in all the chocolate that we get from Europe, sometimes they have this like almost borderline plastic taste. And I can't quite put my finger on it, what it is. But maybe that's how chocolate is supposed to taste. But I was raised with American chocolate, so I don't know.
For some reason, this reminds me of Easter. It has an Eastery candy flavor to it for me.
I just want to say there are two hawks fighting in the sky outside my window, and it's fucking badass to look at.
Ooh.
They were just going at each other outside my window. Get them, hawks.
We had a crows versus seagull battle earlier this week outside my work.
Sorry. I didn't mean to derail everything. I just looked outside and I was like, those are two hawks trying to kill each other. Holy cow. Or maybe they're trying to mate.
Oh, yeah, that's they do. I believe they do mate in flight, so.
Well, that's all I have for this episode. Do you have anything else?
No.
All right, well, where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me at twotruefreaks.com. That is our wide world of Two True Freaks podcasting. You can go there and subscribe to our RSS feeds, or you can go to iTunes and look for Two True Freaks and subscribe there. If you want to find out more what's going on our shows, go on over to Facebook, and we have a Two True Freaks group there that posts and plugs all our shows, and we have the Two True Freaks Cantina, where you can just sort of hang around and talk. And if you're not a Facebook person and you're one of those Twitter people, you can go Twitter and watch Gene, the podcasting machine, the tweeting machine.
Da, 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 da,
we call him Tweety around here.
Da, 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 da,
Tweety. We actually don't call it.
I don't need to change Jim's theme song. Da 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 da. Jim.
Just the classic.
Yeah, I don't need to try and change his theme song.
But yeah, that's where you can find us. Where can they find you?
You can find me at JGuysAndJedi. I run our Twitter account. You can also find me at Hope Molinax. I also have a website called GeekyGirlExperience.com. Probably not that Resistance just wrapped up. I'll probably do kind of like a look back blog. I've been kind of planning that a little bit for a while now, just kind of looking back at the first season as a whole. But I'm still not sure if I'm going to write that yet, though, because 221 Beacon is 2 weeks away. So it might be a summer blog thing I do.
Right.
I kind of want to rewatch. I want to rewatch some of the earlier episodes, because the second half episodes I've watched a few times, but the early half episodes I've only watched like once, maybe twice on a couple of them. So I kind of want to give Resistance a rewatch before I do a look back blog on it. And you can also find me at Archive of Our Own. I'm a fan fiction writer. It's AO3 for short, and my name on there is Chaos Lydia. And my main story is called Forces of Gravity. It's a Thrawn fan fiction. And I'm also working on chapter 2 of The Lucky Leku, where Alexander Kallus infiltrates a boy band because one of them is a rebel spy and he has to figure out which one's the spy. It's Kallus infiltrating NSYNC or Backstreet Boys. Oh my god, it's so much fun to write. So that's where you can find me.
The Lucky Leku.
Yeah! Because, well, I'm a very firm believer there needs to be more artists in Star Wars, and I love the idea of, like, a pop band, and one of them is a rebel spy, but you don't know who it is, and can I read you the opening, paragraph of them?
Sure.
Okay, I will say right out now, this is not my best writing. I started writing this as a joke with me and Megan, and now that I'm more invested into it, I might go back and fix some of this, but this is the opening segment of The Lucky Leku. They were the Lucky Leku, the greatest pop band the galaxy has ever seen. Three Twi'lek men gifted with their voices to spread messages of love and unity. Every night when they stepped out on the stage and sold out arenas, they were the center of the universe. Fans flocked to whatever planet they went to, causing mass chaos and pandemonium. Their screams could be heard for miles around, only drowned out by the sultry songs mixed with techno upbeat music. The Lucky Leku danced their hearts out for their followers, the lights, the noises, the pacing, the love all around them. Their songs, once focused on spreading a fun weekend with a girlfriend or partying until dawn, but now their targets were spreading love against hate, bringing awareness to the oppressive government and their harm to the planets like Ryloth, and being the public voice for those too scared to speak. Followed up with songs about riding in a hot new speeder to the party district of Coruscant. They were a musical force to be reckoned with, and the Empire couldn't touch them.
Hey, can their enemies be another band of guys with lekus, but they're fake, and they're like Milli Vanilli? And actually, at the end, they expose them as like lip syncing. You know, they're somehow like make their fake lekus fall off.
Well, so the point of me writing the story is Talos is getting in because he's forced to work security as his undercover story, so he's working their security. And as he starts getting to know the boys, it's kind of like the early stages of him being like, hearing their stories, I'm like, well, maybe the Empire's not quite doing what's right. But what ends up turning out is that one of the Lucky Leku people, and this is a spoiler for future chapters, I haven't wrote it yet, one of them is force sensitive, and Kallus has to report it to the Grand Inquisitor, and then things like really escalate from there.
Can you have a scene where Farkin shows up?
No!
And is like, you boys need a manager, and then Kallus goes like, guys,
no.
You don't want him as your manager.
No. That's not gonna happen. No, Farkin will not be my story.
I like your sound. I know how to capture it in the studio.
No. No.
That sounds nothing like Grand Moff Tarkin either. I like don't know why I'm doing like a sort of half Palpatine voice, but yeah. Just vaguely creepy, I guess.
But yeah, that's one of my things. So, well, next week we wrap up chapter one or season one.
Yeah, you get to find out how it all happens, and we get to start preparing our wrap up episode.
My boyfriend dies next week.
Spoiler.
My boyfriend dies next week.
Alex. It's lucky you have more than one Star Wars boyfriend. So.
I know. This is the reason why I have more than one Star Wars boyfriend, or else I would always be sad, always.
Oh, before we go, I just want to get this one on tape in case the Star Wars people are listening. In any kind of Star Wars animated episode, I would love to see, just in the background, Doctor Who, like the Tom Baker Doctor Who in K-9, just sort of heading down an alley. It's totally plausible since he's a Time Lord, and it also references in the Tom Baker being a vocal talent for an upcoming character.
That would be cool.
Yeah, you don't even have to see Dot. You can just see K-9 going into an alley and like sort of bumping up against some guy in a jacket with a scarf and a hat.
You know where they do that really prominently? A show that they really do that? And you're going to laugh, but it's great. They do that really prominently in My Little Pony. Because for one, Lauren Faust is a huge Big Lebowski fan, so whenever they're at the bowling alley, you can see the Big Lebowski ponies in the background. They've had Sherlock and John Watson ponies in the background, and they look like BBC Sherlock. That's actually where the character Dr. Hooves came from, because they just happened to have this pony that looked sort of like David Tennant, that had an hourglass as a cutie mark, and they ended up making him a real character. So he is a Doctor Who's pony, and he has, like, the Tom Baker scarf and stuff. And they've started doing that where they'll hide, like, little pop culture ponies in the background. So it's a really – they do that very prominently. Now, they actually had to go to BBC because Doctor Who's was a mistake, because it was just a generic pony who happened to look like David Tennant, and they stuck just a random cutie mark on it that happened to be an hourglass. So the fans were the ones that went, oh my god, a Doctor Who pony! And then My Little Pony went, oh my god, BBC,
please don't sue us!
And so BBC gave them the... Because at first they gave them the name Time Turner, because they couldn't, because the fans gave them the name Doctor Hooves. And so My Little Pony were like, no, his name is Time Turner, because they didn't want to go to BBC. And finally BBC was like, no, it's fine, you guys can use it. And then they made Dr. Hooves an official pony on the show. So it was actually a kind of a fan creation by accident. But they still always had, like, the Big Lebowski ponies in the background until they were featured in the 100th episode. But that's just Lauren Faust. Lauren Faust is a huge Big Lebowski fan, and she puts them in every one of her shows. Like, the Big Lebowski's in Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends. I think they're in Powerpuff Girls at some point, because I think she wrote an episode of that. But I do know that they're in Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends, too, because she's just a big fan.
I'm just saying, put Doctor Who in Star Wars, because I'm probably not going to have time to watch My Little Pony and Powerpuff Girls.
Honestly,
I want it brought to me in my Star Wars.
Honestly, watch the 100th episode and you'll be fine, because it has both of them in it. The 100th episode's called what is it called? It's a fun episode where they feature all the minor characters. All the main six are actually the background characters. So the episode focuses on the minor characters, and that's where you get the big Dr. Hooves episode and the big Lebowski ponies and stuff, where they're helping Dr. Hooves like alter his suit for a wedding. So that's the big one. But anyway,
all right, we'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
We're thinking of starting up a Doctor Who My Little Pony show. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Next week, Jay Guys and Jedi will be all Doctor Who and My Little Ponies from now on.
Well, we need an episode in Who True Freaks. I should do an episode of Who True Freaks.
Two Freaks?
I don't think I could get anybody else. We haven't had an episode of Who True Freaks in so long, but I would love to do an episode of the 100th episode of My Little Pony.
Bye.
Bye.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
Mustafar.